So, Pam, could you talk a little bit about the Queer Arts Festival and the history of it?
Certainly. We're entering our 13th festival this year. The Queer Cultural Center, which is my organization, and we produce the National Queer Arts Festival, is celebrating our 16th birthday this year. So we were founded as an organization by activists and artists who were part of the Cultural Affairs Task Force in San Francisco way back in 1994. And after 5 years of planning and trying to figure out things and seeking funding and developing our ideas and our mission statement, we launched our first San Francisco Queer Arts Festival in 1998. We've been going pretty strong. This year we're going to have about 70 events in a little over 30 days. So, and this year marks, well, if we were McDonald's and we had a sign, we would say 2,500 artists served. So we've presented and showcased the work of 2,500 visual artists, performance, musicians, dance, choreographers, since our first festival in 98. And we've commissioned more than close to 200 artists now by the end of this festival to create new work for the festival. So that's been very exciting. And then our last thing that Queer Cultural Center does in addition to the National Queer Arts Festival is that we also help artists develop arts organizations so that they can start to realize some of their own ideas and directions.
How did this develop? Like, what need did it grow out of? What was there missing that this was filling?
Well, I think initially we looked around and thought, well, there's a performance here and there's a performance there and there's a space here and a space there. And we didn't see a lot of sharing of resources, and so we held a whole series of community meetings. Mostly the feedback that we got from people is that they wanted sort of a central clearinghouse, but they wanted it to be more like a web where someone would help people connect with resources and funding and other arts organizations and be a partner in work, but not necessarily bring another facility into the mix. And that delighted us because none of us were really up for a capital campaign. So we wanted to get money directly into the hands of artists. So what we did was we started all these programs over the course of the first few years of our existence as a nonprofit, started getting funding for small emerging queer arts organizations to make bigger ones. Radar Productions, the women's writing group, came out of QCC's QMAD program, as did the Queer Women of Color Media Arts Project. They were already existing on their own, but when they joined with us, they began presenting the festival, and they grew. And Fresh Meat Transgender Festival is another program that also came through QCC's, we call it QMAD. It stands for Queer Multicultural Arts Development, and that's our art organization hibernation program, if you will. But we also have the commissioning program, and that directly supports artists like OLO to create new programs that are going to happen within the festival or within our programming during the year.
And before we get to OLO, I just wanted to say for people who don't know that this is a festival that happens during June primarily for Queer Pride Month. And I think I've noticed that there's some attempt to have a lot of diversity in terms of sexualities, racial, gender, et cetera. Would that be your assessment?
Absolutely. That was a large part of why we felt we needed to be there, is we wanted to bring the true diversity of the queer community, which I think most of the straight community, et cetera, saw as, you know, wealthy white men. And for our community to really be appreciated and seen in the complete spread thin glory that we that we have. We had to get women and trans people and people of color move to the forefront. So they are the forefront of our programming. One of the things that QCC started with was our bylaws, and our bylaws state that we have to be composed at all times of a majority of people of color on the board.
Hmm.
Yeah,
hmm.
And we just felt that this was important for representation, mm-hmm. and important to let people know we were real. We weren't trying to govern them or take them over, but we were part of these communities. So right now we have 9 members of the board, and we have 2 white men, and everyone else is a person of color.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so we also have Fui Fui on the line to talk about one of the events that you all are going to be putting on as part of the Queer Arts Festival. Did you want to talk about what your group is doing and what your performance is about?
Sure, sure. So our group is OLO, O-L-O. It's a short for One Love Oceania. And we're going to be doing a performance, the night of poetry, dance, music, and theater performances, which is going to be Wednesday, June 9th, at 8 o'clock until 10 o'clock at the Garage at Howard Street down in San Francisco. We're really, really excited.
Can you tell a little bit about what this performance is?
Sure. Well, perhaps I could just jump a little back on who our group is. We're a Pacific Islander queer women's group, and we're a group of activists, and we came together. The impetus for the founding of this group was we're a response, actually, to the large Pacific Islander support for Prop 8. So Pacific Islanders, if folks can remember back to last year in November, Pacific Islanders came out. A lot of our communities and our brothers and sisters came out in support of Prop 8. So we thought that it was really important to show the reasons why, perhaps first and foremost, we might be coming out. Communities might be coming out in large numbers for Prop 8. That's some of the work that I do in my research. And then the work that we also do is we wanted to counter that by participating in public ways, like throughout our community. We came together as a group to show solidarity for each other and to show that firstly, there are women. That there was Pacific Islanders were women also, because many of the images that are represented of Pacific Islanders in the mainstream were usually very masculine images. Wonderful men that we work and love, those were the predominant images out in the mainstream, usually as football players, you know, in the military. And so we wanted to show women's faces and that women's lives matter. And then we also wanted to show that we were queer and that we were very proud of being queer, and that queerness for us was also founded essentially within our Pacific Islander identities and histories.
The performance that you're giving, what will that be about?
All of us in the group are all women from different parts of the Pacific. So Oceania is a name that was given by a Pacific Studies scholar that really denotes the region. So the region, for the most part, we never named ourselves. Even the word, I mean, we went through South Pacific. So we're a combination of women from the different regions of the Pacific. Oceania, as I was just mentioning, that Oceania actually is a term that a Pacific Studies scholar named Ebeli Haofa coined. And it was a term for us to rename ourselves, because the names that the Pacific region has been given historically has always been given by corporations, right, like the South Seas, the military, or by colonial governments. And so Oceania is a term that denotes like Polynesia, which is where islands like Tonga comes from, or Hawaii comes from, and Fiji, and then Micronesia, and then Melanesia. Fortunately for us, we feel very blessed because we have so many sisters who are from all these different regions of the Pacific, or Oceania. Excuse me. The performances we're going to do are contemporary takes on some of the traditional Pacific legends, and also many of us are also poets and artists, so we're going to be talking about our experiences as queer women here in the diaspora. We're going to be talking about our experiences as daughters, as mothers, as sisters, and as lovers. One of the themes that we're going to be examining is that being queer is a homecoming.
Can you describe it a little bit more?
Sure. Well, it's a theater performance, first and foremost. It's a contemporary theater performance. So it's going to include poetry, dance, music, theater performances. There are going to be soliloquies. There's going to be soliloquies. There is going to be music. Erica Benton is a Chamorro activist and a musician who lives here in the Bay Area. She's performed all over, actually nationally and also all over the world. And she's going to be doing a few new numbers, so some love songs. Another woman that perhaps is also known here in the Bay Area, who's been here for a while, is in a veteran drummer, Matu Feliciano, who is not Pacific Islander, but she's definitely a Latina sister that we're going to be also using. She's going to be doing a different beats in the background that we're going to be following her. Then a dancer, we also have a dancer who's going to be doing some contemporary and also traditional dances, is another sister in our group. Her name is Madeline Alefosio, who's Samoan American, so she's going to be also doing dance numbers. I myself am a scholar, but I'm also a poet. That's really what I want to do. In my real life, that's where I'm located, as a poet. Also, Loa, who's my sister, we work closely together. She's also going to be doing poetry. So there's also a generational difference. There's young women, and there's young women in early 20s all the way to 30s. So we're really, really excited about this.
And what are some of the issues that you'll be exploring in these different pieces?
We're going to be exploring the complexities of being Pacific Islander and queer from all our different standpoints and our different experiences. For example, for me, I'm going to be talking about being the oldest daughter in a Tongan family. How it's a secret. It's a secret that I've kept in so many ways to keep my family together, or so I imagined, that I thought that it was best to keep the secret rather than to tear the family apart. Then in this poem, soliloquy piece that I'm going to perform, I also come to the conclusion that I no longer can live with this heavy obligation. And when I come out to the family, actually, surprisingly, the family accepts me. And I also talk about how in this journey of quote-unquote coming out, this journey takes a whole lifetime, right? And it happens in so many different places, that the journey for a Pacific Islander woman coming out, first and foremost, the coming out process begins with me to myself, then it's to my family, the family that's alive, right? And there's so many, we have so many members of that family. It's not just for us as Tongans and as Pacific Islanders, it's not just the family that we were born to, but it's also the extended family, and then it's also to the nation. And then, because we live here in the U.S. diaspora, it's also about these new communities, these new activist communities that we've created here in the United States. And then also, because we're Tongan and are part of our indigenous beliefs, is it's also coming out to the ancestors, you know, to the people who came before, and also to those that are going to come after.
Ashe.
Wow. Okay. So that's really amazing. And during the year, the group Olo does other things that are political?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we came together. We're really a response. We're really a response to this overwhelming support in Pacific Islander communities for Prop 8. And the work that we do, it culminates in so many different levels. Like, as I mentioned, we do this through research. Jean Melisaine, who is actually a young Pacific Islander woman, wrote an article about how the Mormon Church was, you know, as folks know, was one of the biggest financial supporters for this, for the passing of Prop 8. We wanted to show how in our community so many of us are converted into Mormonism. And this happened in the years where we see the extreme disparity between the rich and the poor in the Pacific because of the rise of neoliberalism, right? And this has a lot to do with American occupation and American colonialism. So, I mean, it isn't a surprise whatsoever that with those histories of U.S. colonialisms in the Pacific, many of us would convert into a Mormon church. A U.S.-based church like the Mormon church, that's also going to navigate our routes of migration to the U.S. And also the routes of the ways that we're going to imagine how our communities are set up here in the U.S. And this is exactly how it has been for Pacific Islanders. What a lot of folks don't know is that the Mormon Church specifically targeted communities of colors, especially Pacific Islanders. The stereotype is that we're big people, right? So we were used, our bodies specifically, and our communities were specifically asked by the brethren from Salt Lake City to go out and to police the temple.
We're going to have you on again and talking more about this, because you have obviously a whole wealth of information to talk about. Before we go, I just want to give Pam, give you a chance to talk about a couple of the other events that are going to be going on. I noticed there's other things, like on June 10th, there's the We Were There, the Lesbian Response to the Early AIDS Epidemic Among Gay Men.
Yes, this is a wonderful program. We Were There is the title of a film that Emanuela Antolin has just finished. She actually was one of our commissions this year for creating queer community, and so she won this commission to have this event. She's going to be showing the film, which interviews a lot of the 80s activists, lesbian activists, who were helping out gay men when it was when the epidemic was still called GRID, gay-related immune disease.
And I remember that.
Yeah. So she went and interviewed Sarah Schulman, and she's also interviewed Lenore Chin, who was our past board president here in San Francisco, to talk about some of the tactics and some of the things that happened and the way that relationships changed between lesbians and gay men. And in addition to the screening, there's a reception and some performances, because there's an exhibit of ephemera from the period. So there are articles and posters and magazine articles about the early days of the AIDS epidemic that were written by lesbians, or where you can see that lesbians were having the new arm of ACT UP, which was the women's part of ACT UP. And then also this coming week, we've got Bereed Mistagil, which is a staged reading of the true stories of queer Arab women. And that's going to be at Exit Cafe on the 11th and 12th. What it is these women, of course, could not leave the Middle East, queer women. And so a group of Middle Eastern women from California are presenting their work as staged readings, as performances. So that's going to be exciting. And we're especially excited to be working with Sins Invalid this year on a new piece called Disposable Bodies. And that's going to look at what bodies are considered fit and which lives are held as valuable. Mm. And Sins is an amazing troupe of actors and dancers and writers who are disabled. And they are some of the most amazing performers I've ever seen. And this show is looking at bodies through the lenses of, like, disability, queerness, and race. So it's about colonization and storytelling, epilepsy and eugenics, community history and personal narrative, black families and the construction of masculinity. And those are just some of the things that are going to be explored in this new piece.
Well, once again, it looks like the Queer Arts Festival is the cutting edge of queer pride. I must really hand it to you all, because sometimes certain other events seem to leave me without much feeling of substance. So I'm really glad to have the both of you on to talk about this. And people can find out more information at your website.
Yes, please go to www.queerculturalcenter.org. Sorry, you have to spell it all out.
Great. And can I also give the website as well?
Absolutely.
For tickets? Yeah, I just would like to encourage folks to please buy tickets, because they're a very limited number of tickets. So it's just www.brownpapertickets.com/event. And you can find us there. And our group is called OLO, O-L-O. And our performance is going to be on Wednesday, June 9th in San Francisco.
Yeah, you can get tickets for all of the events in the festival that are doing advance tickets through Brown Paper Tickets by going to our calendar. And if you go to June 9th, you will see Olo there, and you can click on that and get the long description and the bios for all the artists and a direct link to their website for selling tickets.
Okay, well, thank you both of you for being on Women's Magazine.
Thank you so much to both of you for the great work you do.